SFMSports.net. On air, online, mobile, on demand.
This is Mike Evans of the Chesapeake Bayhawks, and you're listening to MSI Radio.
This is Rick Matthews from Uncle Rick's Relax Hammocks. You can find us at www.relaxhammocks.com. You're listening to MSI Radio.
Hey, I'm Jacob Body by Jake, and you're listening to Lacrosse on Maryland Sports Insider.
Inside the crease for the Chesapeake Bayhawks here with Maryland Sports Insider on Blog Talk Radio. Our first official full hour-long week here of Inside the Crease. Our fans know that last week we had our nice little half-and-half episode finishing out the wing season, but now here we are, full-fledged Chesapeake Bayhawks MLL lacrosse season underway this week. I'm your host, Jared Walsh. Alongside with me, I've got Bill Chris and Brian Bartram. All of us calling in today, all of us sitting in rainy weather in our respective homes, but a great show for you guys this evening. We have two guests tonight. We'll have Michael Evans from the Chesapeake Bayhawks calling in the first half hour of the show. In the second half of the show, we'll have Greg the Beast Grenlian from the New York Lizards calling in the second half, with the Lizards being the Bayhawks' opponent in this upcoming week of action. We also have a great announcement to make to all of our fans. They may have seen it up on Facebook. We have partnered up with another local internet affiliate, SFMSports.net, where you can just another avenue of where you can find Inside the Crease and our home games, Chesapeake Bay Bayhawks home games as well. So you can listen at smfsports.net. You can click on the Bayhawks link, listen on your desktop, or scan the QR code to get the Bayhawks lacrosse on your phone with the TuneIn app. Chesapeake Bayhawks lacrosse for Maryland Sports Insider and smfsports.net, online, mobile, and on demand. So a lot of different ways you can find us as well. We will be posting our new link for our game day broadcasts on our website this week, so you'll be able to catch that through Spreaker over the weekend. So just a lot of different ways where you can. It's going to be awesome to be able to find us in all these different areas. Well, now, gentlemen, let's get down to business and underway here in our show. 1 week of MLL lacrosse is underway. So, you know, the standings are what they are because, you know, everybody has had one game, so you either have one win or one loss. But our winners, the Cannons, Lizards, Machine, and Outlaws. The losers, Bayhawks, Hounds, Launch, and Rattlers after our first week of play. And the way that the way that breaks down is New York beating Rochester at in New York 18-15. Then Boston also winning at home, a score of 15-9 over the Chesapeake Bayhawks. We'll talk about that game a little bit more in depth in just a few moments. The Ohio Machine went to Charlotte, and they won 15-8. And the Denver Outlaws, picking up where they left off last regular season, with a win 14-10 over the Florida Launch. So those are the scores. And guys, just before we get into the game, just...
I was going to say, Jay, don't forget, with that Denver win, that's now 21 straight regular season games that they've won in a row, still setting an MLL record as we speak.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a great thing to have, but I think it's one of those things, too, where I'm sure everybody would, or everybody from Denver would love to say that they, are working on a full-on, I guess what that would be, 23-game win streak.
Right.
if you include the semis and the finals from last year. But nonetheless, it's still a record and still pretty impressive there. So the first thing I want to ask you guys real quick before we get into Bayhawks lacrosse here, Ohio-Charlotte game. Real quick, I'll start with you, Bill. Ohio going to Charlotte, winning 15-18. Of course, Charlotte coming out like gangbusters at the end of last season, really making an impression on the league in the playoffs. Turn around and lose to the woeful from last year, I should say, the woeful Ohio machine. What's your take on that 15-8 machine victory?
You know, I'm not going to steal a whole lot of Brian's thunder here, mainly because of the fact that, you know, he and I had been talking about this game before. And, you know, to me, I'm just going to go out and say it's not shocking, but it's still, you know, surprising because, you know, there's still the stigma with the Ohio machine. You know, it's the expansion team that really had not been able to get it together. And, you know, they showed some signs of life last year. And then all of a sudden, you know, this year they come out, you know, all cylinders firing, getting a lot of production out of some new guys who were brought over. So, the you know, for them, the LXM merger has definitely paid dividends in resuscitating this Ohio machine team. The only thing that, you know, I have to say is, you know, they still I don't believe they had Logan Schuss back for that game. Don't hold me 100% to that.
He did not play in that game.
Right. So, you know, again, you're still getting that guy who was, you know, pretty much the leader of your team last year back into the fold. You know, I think this is a team that might, you know, be someone to be reckoned with in the future. But again, I don't want to steal too much of Brian's thunder because I know he was chomping at the bit on this very topic. So I'll turn it over to him.
Yeah, Bill and I were talking as I was sitting in urgent care over the weekend with the stomach flu, and we were talking about how I didn't agree with the power rankings going into the first opening weekend with Ohio being so low on the original power rankings on MLL's website, and reason being is because they are Team LXM. I mean, they've got Kyle Harrison, they've got Peter Baum, you know, obviously too, Beardman is not on this, didn't play this past weekend either, but he's also there, and you've got Scotty Rogers in goal. You put a little bit of a defense in front of Scotty Rogers, and he's a freaking beast in goal, as we've seen not only in college but his time up at Hamilton. You know, he's been a great goal. And you put a little bit of scoring, and you've got a really good team. I mean, Kyle Harrison, Jake Bernhardt, and then you had also Peter Baum, a number one overall pick from the previous collegiate year, chose to go to the LXM to be with his sponsors, and you've got this year's Charlotte Hounds. Bill and I were saying, I predicted that this is going to be your Charlotte Hounds this year in the Ohio machine with a surprise run possibly in the playoffs. You know how we saw Charlotte go into the finals against the Bayhawks last year, and everybody was shocked that was what the finals were. But don't count out the Ohio machine. I mean, you've got a great goal scorer, Kyle Harrison. Never really got a chance to put his foothold in with the Denver Outlaws when he was playing, but has done a great job out at LXM. And, you know, not only that, but he's Team USA, and you've got him and Peter Baum, and you've got a very high-scoring offense going with these guys. Not only that, guys, but let's give credit to Ohio this week, too, for holding one of the top scoring teams from last year to only 8 goals in the first initial week. And Charlotte had pretty much 100% of their team on the field. You know, they don't have a whole lot of the NLL players on their roster, so they had a good chunk of their guys playing who were already playing from the playoffs last year in the championship game against Ohio, a team that everybody has counted out and keep them down. But you've got a great mix with these guys, and they're going to show, you know, mark my words, they're going to be a top three team throughout the entire year as they go along. And it's, you know, give credit to Kyle Harrison, those guys, and they've got a great coaching staff. And, you know, also, they have their highest win total now for on the road with one victory in franchise history. So that's something to go off of right there, too.
Exactly. And here's the thing, too, is as you mentioned, you know, LXM merger coming in, Kyle Harrison, 3 goals and an assist. Peter Baum, 3 goals and assist in last week's game. And then, Brian, to what your point, what you're saying in terms of holding the Hounds, you know, Mike Sawyer, only 1 goal. Ryan Young, only 2 goals. Matt Danowski, 0 goals. So that's really where you see, you know, them really kind of holding that offense down with being able to put, like you said, getting a defense in front of Scotty Rogers and him being able to play well. So that kind of wraps that up. Let's we have a few minutes before Mike Evans will call in. So let's just start talking about this game here. Chesapeake Bayhawks going to Boston Cannons for the game. And, you know, I don't know if what you want to call it, but I don't think this was the way that the Bayhawks wanted to start it off this season at all. Now, again, you know, they're going for a three-peat championship here. Now, granted, it is just the first game, so I don't think there's a lot to get worked up about, but when you have your defending champs coming in and being held scoreless in the first quarter, not only that, but Boston able to go on a 4-goal opening run that's spread into the second quarter. Bill, you know, your takeaway from this Chesapeake Cannons game from last weekend.
You know, I'm not going to get too worked up. Excuse me. Sorry about that. You know, it's the first game of the season. You know, everyone's still trying to figure everyone out. There's a lot of new faces on the offense for the Bayhawks. And, you know, this is a Cannons team that, you know, they're not a whole lot of new parts to it. You know what you're going to get. You know, I think they had a good game and they took it to the Hawks.
And I'm actually going to – we're going to bring in – let's see, Bill's about to bring in our guests. We have Mike Evans on hold waiting for us right now. So it'll be great. We can chat with him and see what he thinks about, you know, the opening game and where he sees that this team can really go this season. And, you know, see what the new mantra is. Remember last year, Brian, the slogan was the chase. So, Bill, go ahead and bring on our guest.
All right, calling in live, Chesapeake Bayhawks defender Mike Evans calling in here this evening. Mike, welcome to Inside the Crease, or should I say welcome back to Inside the Crease. Myself, Brian Bartram, and Jared Welsh here with you live this evening.
Thanks, guys. What's going on? It's great to be back.
It's glad to be talking with you again, Mike. And we were just getting ready. We were just starting to talk about last week's game. So just kind of give us your perspective on the game against the Cannons.
I mean, obviously it wasn't how, you know, we wanted to start off, and it's not how the Bayhawks and the Bayhawks organization want to be reflected, but you know, you have to hand it to the Boston Cannons. They played a great game. They came out with a lot of intensity, and it just seemed like we didn't match it, and they won that one. So yeah, got to give them credit to do, and hopefully we'll see them again soon.
And with, you know, the new season coming in, and last year you guys were talking, you know, the season was dubbed the Chase. Has there been any talk? Is there a theme for this year? Is there some kind of team mantra that you guys are rallying around for this season?
I mean, I don't think it's anything official just yet. That, you know, I don't know if it's per se public information yet, but I think there's a few different ideas and a few different elements that Coach Kyle and the Bayhawks organization have been tossing around that, you know, we kind of go by, and I'm not sure exactly if there's going to be one thing like you said last year with the Chase. I don't know if there's going to be one thing that we're going to kind of live by, but they're definitely still the same morals and the same goals and objectives that we've always had, so.
And one of the things that is interesting about the way that this league is made up is that there's so much lacrosse talent out there, and the Bayhawks roster And some of the other teams too is very deep in terms of who the coaches can pull from on any given week. What is it like? What's it been like during preseason and training camp, and even preparations for last week's game, with having such a plethora of great players at the disposal of Coach Cottle?
I mean, I think it's a great thing. I think it's I think if anything, it just helps breed healthy competition amongst everyone on the team. We're very fortunate that we do have a lot of great individual players, and the fact that we get to come together and practice and play together and scrimmage, it definitely brings the best out of all of us. And, if anything, it's a blessing, but I can also see how it can be tough, tough for the big guy that eventually is going to have to make some decisions about who's going to play and who's not going to play. I think even saying that, I think a lot of guys on our team have they know that coming in, and they're willing to sacrifice, for the better good of the team and whatever it's going to take for us to reach that ultimate goal if we're fortunate enough to do so. I think that people are willing to do that, but I definitely think the hardest part of having so many talented players on your team is that they're all not going to be able to play. And, again, that doesn't come down to the players, the coaches and the owners and the organization, makes those decisions about who's going to play, and I think that's the toughest part. But I think definitely it's great that we have had healthy competition, and there are so many great guys on the team, not only great talent, but also great just people in general. So, it's exciting. And like I said, we don't want to start off like we did last week, but, we got to put that behind us, and then we got a big game against New York. So looking forward to that.
One of the biggest changes in the roster during the off season was Mike Simon moving out to the Denver Outlaws, and Brendan Mundorf moving in from the Outlaws to the Bayhawks. Kind of an interesting trade because it's not necessarily equal pieces. You get a defender, a long stick midfielder, a guy with some speed and good at ground balls, traded for an attackman. Talk about, both of those guys and what that trade means for the Bayhawks for this season.
If you look at it from a trade perspective, that is how it seems. But if you recall, we did get Brian McGill, who's a defenseman from Denver, and we also traded John Grant Jr. as an attackman to Denver. So it's kind of like a defenseman for a defenseman and an attackman for an attackman is the way it worked out. But to your point, I think that getting Mundorf on the team. Mundorf, in my eyes, is the best offensive player in the league. He's one of the hardest people to guard. And I've guarded him for 5-6 years now, and he's just a tremendous competitor, very tough person on the field and off the field. He's a great, great teammate. And with leaving and losing Mike Simon, Mike's a great guy. He's very competitive. He's a tremendous player. You don't want to see people go, but I think he did a great amount for the Bayhawks, and I think that we're obviously very, very happy with the contributions that he's made, and I think Brendan's excited also to become part of the Bayhawks. So it's exciting to have him out there and see him in our uniform and not have to go against him all the time.
One of the newer additions to the team as he came in last season, Jesse Bernhardt, made a really big impact, I thought, on the team, in his first week with the team when he was eligible last season. Have you seen what kind of growth have you seen in him throughout the course of last season and then, the beginning of this season?
I think Jesse's a tremendous player. I think he, like a lot of guys on the Bayhawks, it's great. He's also a great person. And I think if anything, it's not that his talent or work ethic grew, because he's always had that. I think just being comfortable and making that transition from playing college to playing in the league. And I think he's done that, you know, as you guys have said, I think he's done a tremendous job. I think he's, you know, one of the best defensive players in the league. I think he's the best transition player in the league. And, you know, I think there's nothing but good things that come from Jesse. And he's definitely, you know, a great guy to have in your locker room, a great guy to have on the team. But I mean, I think he's great. You know, obviously being a defenseman and playing with Jesse, you know, it's exciting to watch him play. And sometimes I just, you know, get caught staring there when he's got the ball, because he's a special talent.
And now I want to turn over to Bill, see if he's got any questions for you.
Okay.
You know, the big thing for me is that, you know, I've seen a, you know, there's obviously been a lot of movement as far as new pieces within the offense. But as far as from, we'll say, the nucleus for your close defense with Nicky, Brian, yourself, and even Kip, you know, how, I guess, fortunate would you say it is for you guys and the comfort level that you have knowing that you guys have been playing together for a while now?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, like you said, I mean, the comfort level is everything. And you know, we're all very close on and off the field. And especially, you know, in a league like this, you don't get to spend, you know, every day and every, you know, it's not college, we get to spend every day, every night together, practicing and playing. It's very important that you need to bring in that chemistry and that, you know, that experience together. And I think, you know, I don't know if there's another team in the league that has that chemistry and time spent together, like Nicky, Brian, and I do on defense for the past couple of years. And not to say that other defenses don't spend a lot of time together, but I mean, just as far as moving parts, those parts haven't moved, like you guys have said. But no, I mean, it's great. And, you know, we all obviously stick up for each other and you know, care for each other on and off the field. And you know, we're obviously bummed out about last week, because that's not the kind of performance that you know we spoke, and you know, that's not the kind of performance that we want to, you know, convey to the Bayhawk fans and the MLL fans. So we're excited to get back out there next week and hopefully rewrite this ship. So
putting your coaching hat on a little bit, what would you say your biggest takeaway would be from the game against the Cannons?
From putting my coaching hat on, from what? From,
well, we'll
from
just
a
say
defensive
from,
perspective, or
let's just go from a general. You know, what were some of your main takeaways holistically from the game?
I mean, just from the game in general, I think that, you know, like I said before, I think they came out with a great amount of intensity, and you know, from a team like the Bayhawks, where we're usually very intense and energetic, I think maybe we were lacking that intensity, myself included, in matching what they came out with. And we just kind of play a little flat, and it's definitely not what we want to, you know, convey to the public and convey to everyone else who hasn't seen us really play yet, because that's definitely not who we are. So big picture-wise, I think it was just that. I think, you know, execution on defense, I can speak for, because I obviously play it. You know, we could have done a better job, sure, of executing the game plan that the coaches had in front of us, and you know, we didn't do so well there. So I think there's a lot of things that we could work on as a team, and I think that we will, and I think we'll be fine. I think you know, this week coming up is a big test for us again to kind of, like I said, put that game behind us and focus on the next one. So,
would you say that you feel that loss kind of, I guess, sparked the motivation inside of everyone just to kind of say, okay, a little bit of a wake-up call?
Sure. I mean, you know, anytime you lose a game, it's definitely, you know, you can use it as a tool for motivation. You can use it as a tool and say it was a wake-up call. So I definitely would say that that's an appropriate comment, that, you know, it's either, you know, no team's going to lay down for you, and everyone's going to, you know, bring it every week. And if you're not there to match the intensity and match the, you know, the level of play, then you're going to lose. So hopefully, there's no doubt in my mind that will be better this week.
Well, I want to turn you over to Brian here.
Just a real quick question. We talked to McCready's last week at practice, and we were talking about the new unis and Oregon Ducks-esque, you know, kind of Nike uniform that you see the Oregon Ducks wearing for college with the, you know, the wings on the sleeves, and bringing back not only but the teal color too as well. Back into the uniforms, you know, back in the day, that's the color the Bayhawks actually had as part of their original uniform. So, kind of nice to see. What's your outtake on the new unis for you guys?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think they're great. I think, you know, I think our team of designers spend a lot of time on designing them. So, you know, I definitely think a lot of the fans like them, and you know, I think they're pretty cool. But I also like the old ones too. So it's just tough. It was tough to see a different jersey, but I mean, really doesn't matter the color of the jersey. I guess you could say it just matters the team name on it. So, I mean, we could play with whatever you throw at us, but I thought they were pretty cool.
Yeah. We were talking about it extensively between Jared and Bill. They said to kind of stay more the traditional route, and why change something that's already great
yeah.
in the last week. And then, you know, I was saying, you know, it's nice to see those feathers on the side, because, you know, with the defense being fear of the flock, now you actually have the wings to kind of flap out.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people like them and some people won't, but I think all in all, I think the kids will like them because they're different crazy colors and stuff, so I think it'll be good.
And then one last thing is, have you talked to Kip this week? How's he doing after last week's game and having to go out in the first quarter?
Kip, I think I think he'll be okay. I think, you know, I think if anything, it was a precautionary measure that Coach Kyle took just to be safe. And, you know, I think that was definitely the right call. And I think he's doing okay. And I think he'll be out there this week. So we'll see. But, you know, if I was a betting man, I would say he'd be out there.
And now the last thing, we're having one of the things that we're going to do differently with the show this year is we're going to try to have a guest from the opposing team call in and get their take on the upcoming game. And it just so happens that Greg Grenlian is going to be on the show in a little bit. And he actually sent a message on Twitter to us saying that he hopes to tune in as Michael Evans shares his killer arm day routine. So I feel like there's some explanation needed on that.
Wait, what did it say?
He said to tune into our show as Michael Evans shares his killer arm day routine.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a killer arm day routine. I'm probably more proud of my chest day routine and my bench routine, but you know, Greg might have me on the arms. I don't know if I can compete with him on the arms, but I think I might have him on the chest, so who knows.
Well, Mike, we really appreciate you taking some time out of your evening to chat with us, and I know Brian and Bill will be excited to see you this weekend. You know, good luck. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be there, but good luck this weekend, and those guys will talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. I have to, I'm supposed to give a shout out to a good friend of mine, John Orson. It's his 39th birthday today, so happy birthday, John Orson.
All right. Well, there we go. Well, again, thanks a lot, Mike, for calling and spending time with us.
See you, man.
And that's a happy birthday to former Bayhawk John Orson.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, that was Mike Evans, defenseman of the Chesapeake Bayhawks, tuning in there with us. So it's, you know, always great to be able to chat with him whenever we can. He always spends good time with us. So any takeaways, guys, real quick before we switch gears here from the chat with Evans? Bill, I'll start with you.
You know, Mike's one of those guys that he's always a stand-up individual, and, you know, it's kind of one of those things he'll call it as he sees it. And, you know, I respected his answer when he said they came out flat. And, you know, it's the beginning of the game of the season. You know, Some people get up for that. Some people just kind of, you know, go into the season. Everyone's different, but I think it's good that they got that wake-up call. They know they're not invincible. They know they got some work to put in, and I think they realize that. And this is a team with a lot of experience, and I think that they'll embrace this. And, you know, I don't think we'll see a repeat performance. You know, obviously, every game in the Major League Lacrosse schedule is important. There's really no weak cog in the league. Every game is going to be tough, so you got to be up for every game, and that's just a prime example. And, you know, kudos to Mike for standing up and basically just saying, you know, hey, we came out flat, not going to happen again.
And Brian, anything that you took away from our conversation with Mike Evans?
Yeah, you know, going with what Bill said, you know, you come out a little flat, and they, you know, they understand that they came out a little bit flat, and I think a lot of it had to do with the injury to Kipp early on, because it kind of changes the game flow for you, especially when you've got your signal caller, you know, captain-esque person for the defensive side being put out, and you've got this Tyler's got to come in the game kind of cold. I mean, you're thrown in instantly because of somebody's injury, and I know Mike said that was more of a precautionary reason that they pulled him out, but nonetheless, it's still kind of throws some of the mantra and some of the other stuff that's going on, the game flow for that defensive guy side. And, you know, you can kind of stay flat when that happens. You know, you come out, Kipp wasn't doing a bad job. You look at the stats, you know, he only let in 3 goals. And at that point he was, you know, 70% on the saves when he went out. But, I mean, it was very early on in the first quarter. So it's going to throw some guys off. And then plus getting started and kind of getting, you know, going from that mindset of, all right, I went from work, now I've got to start, you know, everything back up again. And these guys are gamers. They know once you get into the season, it's go time for these guys, and especially on that defensive side. Those guys take a lot of pride in being one of the best defenses in Major League Lacrosse and in the history of Major League Lacrosse too. So it's they'll be ready. In the next several weeks, you know, we've kind of seen in the last several seasons, we started out very well in the beginning and then have kind of tailored off towards the end. Maybe it's we have this one bad week and then we start to hit our stride going into the next you know, several games, and we don't look back at that point.
We look at this game against Boston here, and then, you know, a couple of things that stand out to me and you know, that are very Bayhawk-esque. You know, we get scoring from Steven Brooks, McCready's, Hunt getting in the action, Rubior, Abbott, and Mundorf all taking over and getting some points on the board there. And when you look at the starting roster for that game, basically those are the guys that, you know, you look through that roster and say, okay, most of our main guys scored. You know, Michael Kimmel, a very quiet day for him, which is a little odd. But all in all, I think you're getting points from guys you expect to get points from. From that, you had 3 different guys take faceoffs: Rand, McGill, and Pizer, all taking faceoffs. And faceoffs are pretty close on the day. You know, you had to send in the 3-headed monster against Chris Eck, and you're able to get 2 extra wins over him with that 3-headed monster. But on the opposite side, you kind of have a slightly new-look Boston Cannons because, as we mentioned last week, you know, Brody Merrill is such a key piece to an MLL roster, and you add him onto that roster with Sweeney, who's dangerous and always plays well against the Bayhawks or has in the past, and you get him in transition with, you know, Steven Berger or Paul Rabel, or these guys, and I can see that this extra piece of Brody Merrill might really be a huge factor. But the one stat that stands out to me overall from this game: Kevin Buchanan with 7 goals, and I can't remember the last time that Kipp Turner has been on the Bayhawks where one guy has scored more than 4 or 5 goals.
But remember,
you know, and now granted, now Kip wasn't in the whole game. I realize that, but I'm saying in
first quarter.
But in that era, you still have the defense in front of him to have one guy, and Buchanan did score two of the three goals that that Kip let in, which I think is just very odd for this team. So hopefully it's just a fluke, and we'll see what happens as the season progresses.
And, you know, the one thing with especially with Brody, keep in mind, he just played the night before and was out there the next day. So, you know, that's just a testament to him and his ability and his conditioning.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Just and I'm sure beat up as well, because, you know, those NLL games, really, really tough, and you got to transition to running, you know, full field in his case, you know, doing a lot of transition that he does. You're right, though. I mean, I think it really speaks to his conditioning.
And the other thing is, and, you know, this comes down to, you know, you have a three-headed, we'll say, face-off monster. You know, our next guest when he comes on, you know, he didn't get the nickname the Beast for nothing. I mean, this guy is a holy terror out there on the field. And, you know, a part of me has a little bit of concern, especially with the face-off situation with the Bayhawks, knowing that they're having to go to a three-headed monster. This is something that we haven't seen out of this team before. They've always had a dedicated face-off guy. We've seen Alex Smith for all those years, and then you saw Adam Rand come in, and he's been serviceable, but he's kind of fallen off a little bit, especially towards the end of last year, and then now this year, you know, we got, you know, you had Pizer and McGill in there on the face-off circle as well. You know, and from, you know, like a wing player, you got to learn these new players too. So I still think there's a lot of moving parts on that face-off side for the Bayhawks, which is ultimately concerning to me, because face-off wins equals offensive possession.
And, you know, you go at that, Bill, too. And what's still surprising to me after 2 years now, we still have yet to see Jeff Reynolds really take over any face-offs, really, other than the ones occasional. You know, kind of change the pacing, like Cottle did when he was at Maryland as well. But Jeff Reynolds, let's say, he was a 60% face-off guy in the NLL, and you're talking against guys like Jeff Snyder and such who are beasts at the face-off line. And you know, you've got different types of wing players, too, here with the Bayhawks, a lot more active, faster guys than what we've seen with the Philadelphia Wings. And I'm surprised we haven't moved in that direction yet. I don't know if it's just because of the fact that with his injuries towards the end of last season, but, you know, as we saw him in game practice one when we were there last Wednesday, was he was running sprints up and down, looking great, and I'm just surprised we haven't seen it yet, because that's, you know, we had McGill taking face-offs. You don't usually see Brian McGill take face-offs. We haven't seen him take a face-off since his, like, sophomore year at Syracuse. It's just one of those things that I know we're trying to mix it up because Chris Eck is one of the best in the game, but you know, it's a shame that Adam Rand couldn't stay in there the entire full game and go up against Chris Eck, because he's had some great success in the last 2 years against Chris Eck. That's been one of his better battles, has been against Chris Eck, but this opening weekend was not. You know, him going just above 50% against Chris Eck, actually a little bit under against Chris Eck as a whole, they went about 50% against Chris Eck. But, you know, I would love to see Jeff Reynolds kind of live up to his, in 2 years, 66% for the Wings. That's pretty darn good against some really good competition.
I think that's going to be a dream that will never come to fruition for you especially. You know, Jeff's been on the Bayhawks for how long? They don't use him. I think it's because of his speed. They probably feel that they can more effectively use him on a wing situation. They don't want to get him, you know, tied up on, you know, with the face-off. Yes, he's a good face-off guy. I just, you know, we've talked about this every year. I'm to the point now. It's a dream that I do not see happening. I think if it was going to happen, it was going to happen by now.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about speed and not wanting that, but you also talk about the need for being able to have the face-off win itself, too. And that's something that we've been struggling with ever since the loss of Alex Smith. So, you know, just food for thought, you know?
Yeah, the three-headed monster, we'll have to see if that continues. And we'll be able to ask our next guest about what that is like going through a game and seeing three different guys that you're going up against, because by now, at this point in their careers, they kind of know each other. They know the other guy's moves. They have faced off against them before. They know the techniques, best ways to try to beat different guys. And, when it gets changed up like that, what kind of effect does that have? And actually, we'll pull him on the line right now. It's perfect timing as our next guest has joined us from the New York Lizards, face-off specialist, Greg the Beast Grenlian, is joining us. And, Greg, thanks for taking some time out of your evening to chat some lacrosse with us.
My pleasure.
We were actually, right before you called in, and it was perfect timing on your part when we had you call in, we were just talking about face-offs. And so I want to get your opinion on this right away. Over the past weekend, the Bayhawks, the team that you'll be facing this week, used a three-headed monster at the face-off X last week. What does that do when you have a guy like yourself or Chris Eck, who is really the sole face-off guy for your team, having to face three different guys in the game? What does that do to your flow at that position?
Well, there's pluses and there's minuses to going against multiple guys. when you play against three guys who are as diverse as the ones they used, I've watched the game film probably three times already. Adam Rand is, in my opinion, the most underrated face-off guy in the league. He's a real tough go. He's a grinder. I mean, you're talking, real low to the ground, real strong motorcycle grip. And you never know what's going to happen when you're down in Annapolis. There's going to be an elbow, a helmet, a foot, anything could be in there. And he makes you work for it. And you got Pizer, who's very skilled. He's going to look for his quick clamp and pinch and pop. And then they throw a long pole in there. And I think that it's a advantage for the Bayhawks if they have three guys who are as diverse as those three guys are. And they all have very different styles. And what I've seen as a face-off coach as well is I've seen that most face-off guys can't handle going against the pole. They don't have a special strategy for it. They don't have the footwork for it. They don't understand how to beat a pole, and they're not comfortable carrying the ball. So having a pole face off is a huge advantage for the Bayhawks in that aspect. But I think most face off guys in this league will have a lot of issues against the pole. The disadvantage, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Actually, I want to feed off of that because from your coaching perspective with the face-off academy that you run, what would you tell a face-off guy, maybe some points, going against a pole?
Well, I know they're listening, so I don't want to tell you too much. Let's just say that we definitely – Coach Cottle, for all I know, is sitting there right now taking notes. We have definitive ways of beating a pole. Not just as a one-on-one. I think the art of using your wing play has gotten lost in the game of lacrosse. You watch college lacrosse, every kid just runs around with the ball stuck in the back of his stick. And I don't think any of them have the skills, well, not any of them, most of them don't have the skills to use their wings, set their wings up ahead of time to make it more advantageous. And that's something that we definitely do, both in the academy and obviously with the Lizards. So we will have specific wing sets that are set up against the pole to make my life easier, and I have specific face-off styles that I use. As you've probably seen in the past, I can face-off on a knee, or I can stand up. The ability to stand up and face-off helps me a lot against the pole.
And one of the things that there is a great spread Inside Lacrosse did on Fowler on his face-off style, and he was talking about the importance of being down on the knee. What is the advantage to that type of position with having your knee down in the ground?
You know what? When it comes down to it, being on a knee, all it does is give you leverage. That's it. Being on a knee in the new college rules where you need to be more spaced off the ball and you have to have your hand off the plastic, it's not a huge advantage. It really isn't. For me, I'm a taller faceoff guy. And in the MLL, the faceoff is tighter. We're more closer to the ball. The guys are stronger. They're grown men. They're not 18-year-old kids. So, you know, for a taller faceoff guy, I need to get down on a knee so I can just gain, I can nullify that leverage advantage that a shorter prototypical faceoff guy has. I hate going on a knee. You know, because then you got to get off of it.
right.
You know, and I think, you know, it's interesting how much Fowler spoke about how advantageous it is to go on a knee when last game he had to stand up most of his faceoffs because he was getting beat while he was on a knee. So, you know, we, at the academy, we teach all of our guys to be able to face off three different stances, being able to be on a knee, be able to stand up, and switch your grip depending on who you go against.
Now, over the opening weekend, you guys came away with an 18-15 victory over the Rochester Rattlers. Just give us kind of your take on the game and maybe some takeaways from that game.
Yeah, it was great to be out there. This was the best training camp I've ever been part of in my entire career. The guys came in shape. They were ready to roll. Everyone was focused. And only having one or two guys in the NLL really helped us. So we had great chemistry, especially in the offensive end right away. You know, I think defensively we still got to figure some stuff out. You know, guys got to fill some roles and figure out where they're most comfortable. Terminology-wise, talking through.
And it looks like we lost Greg here.
Okay, hopefully we get him back here in a second, but yeah, I just, you know what, we had a chance to talk with him a few months ago at the MLL draft, which the last few years has been taking place at the U.S. Lacrosse Convention. Actually, there he is, right there. So we'll just bring him right back in. We lost him for a second, but the Beast is back on the line with us.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I have no idea what happened.
That's no problem.
But the chemistry's there, and, you know, everyone's ready to roll. We felt good the whole game. Even when we were down, we felt confident. We knew, you know, we just had to make a couple halftime tweaks, and it felt great to be out there. It really was, and the crowd was electric. Everyone was very excited about this season, so it was a good, solid win.
The new addition to the team, Kyle Hartzell, 6 ground balls. Talk about what he brings to the Lizards organization.
Well, I mean, Kyle is – I played with Kyle in San Fran in his first couple of seasons, and, you know, I saw the potential then. I love Hartzell. I think he's a man. He works so hard in the offseason. He stays in shape. He's a student of the game. He's such a crazy athlete. And, you know, I think having him on my wing is going to be a lot of fun. You know, I was pretty bummed out. I was actually devastated, is an easy word to say, when I found out that Henderson probably wouldn't be joining us this summer. And, you know, I thought he was an awesome wing. I thought he was a monster on the wing for us. And having Kyle kind of fill that role is great. And he's a leader. He's a leader on the defensive end as well. And it was awesome. It was awesome playing with him again.
And the last guy I want to ask you about before I turn it over to my two co-hosts here, Rob Pinnell coming out with 6 goals, just really blowing things up. Talk about him a little bit.
I think, you know, last year Rob showed up and was just kind of given the keys and was just like, hey, you know, we're not that great on offense, save us. And I don't think it was fair to him. Obviously, he's a world-class talent, but it's always interesting to see how people adapt to the MLL game. And I think Rob has adapted very well. You saw him come on strong at the end of the last season, where it's not hold the ball at X and wait for the assist like it was at Cornell. Now in the MLL, you get 60 seconds, man. You got to catch the ball, push the edge, and you're either going to shoot or you're going to dish it. And I think he's felt really comfortable in that now. He's got a lot of confidence. He knows that we're all behind him. He knows that it's his ball, and we expect him to run, you know, get things running through him. But also there's a lot of pressure off of him as well. You know, Max is healthy. Max is in the best shape I've ever seen him. Our midfield is strong, and he's going to have Ned with him this weekend and moving forward. So it's like a two-headed monster back there at X. So I think Rob is going to have one of those seasons that's going to be for the record books.
Wow.
And now I'll turn it over to Bill. Bill, any questions for Greg?
You know, I'm actually going to take you back to the first question. I know you had talked a lot about, we'll say, the advantages. talk a little bit. I think you were getting ready to go into the disadvantages, and I was enjoying your answer, so I kind of wanted to hear the second half there.
Well, the enormous disadvantage, and we're seeing this a lot with our guys in the high school game, coaches make this mistake all the time, is they rotate so many guys at the X that none of them get in a rhythm. And even though it's tough for me to adapt to three different guys and they're all coming in fresh, and yeah, it'll wear me down a little bit, but the great thing that I get out of it is the fact that none of these guys are going to get in a rhythm. So for me, I'm in the flow of the game. I know I'm going out there every time. I don't have to look at ask coach if I'm going out there. I don't have to think about it. I'm just going to go out and do my thing and worry about the face-off. These three guys have to look at coach. They have to figure out what they're going to do. They have to, you know, if you're bringing the pole up, well, someone else has to run back on defense. That's all stuff that they have to worry about. So, you know, every face-off guy, especially elite-level guys, always talk about the same thing, being in rhythm. And when you're at this level, you'll take any advantage you can get. So if they put three guys out there, great. You know, it'll be a little bit tiring for me, but I'll trade that off for the fact that I'm going to be the only one in rhythm.
Talk a little bit about getting the win, we'll say, on opening day. How important is that for you guys to get that and to set the tone for the season?
Man, that first win means a lot. You know, especially when you got like 3 weeks of training camp. They've been traveling. We were doing three practices a weekend, traveling all over Long Island, and like. Just like any sport, that first game, when you can get guys, and I know the coaching staff feels this way in any sport, when you can get guys and you say, this is what we're putting in this year, just trust me, you know, this is what we're going to do, and you work on it and work on it, and then you come out and you win, it's like, see, guys, it works. We're all on the same page. We know it works. Trust us. Well, now let's go. You come out there and you lose, or if you get, your door's blown off, now you got an issue. Now you got guys going, well, maybe we should change something. And then you got, we have to have a captain's meeting. And then guys start freaking out. Like, there's not a lot of time in this league to get things right. So getting that first win, it's similar to how it is, like, in the NFL or in college football. Like, you get that first win, and it really – everyone kind of takes a sigh of relief and, like, okay, you know, what we're doing works. Now let's just refine it. So it felt great to get that first win.
Well, I know for me on a – we'll say on a personal side, obviously, you know, we do our work with the Bayhawks. But I've been kind of watching the Lizards organization, and it's been cool in my eyes to kind of see the evolution that you guys have gone through. You know, obviously you had some trials and tribulations last year. But with the new ownership in there, talk about just the – you know, it seems like there's just been a breath of fresh air, blowing through the Lizards organization and what that means for you guys as players.
Yeah, I mean, it's a younger crew. I mean, you've seen it over the past few years. It kind of evolved. When I got to the Lizards in 2010, I was a young guy. Now I think I'm the second oldest person on the team, which is horrifying. But, I was pumped when we got Strebel because I was like, yes, I'm not the oldest guy. We're a young team now, and we got a great nucleus that we can sit back and be like, this is going to be our team for a long time. And there's something that's really important about that. In any professional sport, there's a lot of volatile moves all the time, and I feel like we finally got it right. You know, you kind of sit there last year, you look at all the moves we made, and they were good on the stat sheet, going into the game, sitting there going on paper, like, wow, this team's great. But it wasn't bad people. It just wasn't a good mix of personalities. And I feel like this year, we have a great mix of personalities, and everyone's kind of on the same page, and we got mostly local guys. So everyone will be at practice. Everyone will be around all the time. Everyone will be together after games. It'll be good camaraderie, similar to that of the chemistry you'd have with a college team. So I'm pumped about that.
Well, I'll turn you over to our other co-host, Brian Bartram.
Yeah, we were talking to Mike Evans earlier, and you had tweeted out to ask him about his arm workout. He said you have him taken on the arm workout, but he thinks he might have you on the chest. So he was going with that, so he thinks he got you beat on the chest. My biggest question would be, talking about how, Polanco and Spallina, you play with those guys for a while. What's it like having to now see them on the other side and having to go up against them now, being from New York themselves?
Well, you know what? I love Nikki and Brian. And the reason I love them so much is because they kind of remind me of myself. You know, I didn't think about it when I was younger, but now that I'm an older guy, I kind of sit back and I'm like, you know what? Brian Spallina gets this bad rap as like this, bad boy, and you know, he's not, you know, he's just mean and he just talks smack and he hits people and he gets penalties. But you know what? He's like the sweetest person ever. And it's so funny.
He's a cool teacher.
Yeah, yeah. Like, people let their kids around him. So, like, you know, even when he tweets out stuff, he just loves arguing with people. He's a great guy. I mean, when I blew my knee out, he was the first person there. He was the first person to text me every day to check how I was. And when I got traded to, well, not even traded, but I got picked up by the Lizards in 2010, you know, I was sitting there going, oh, hate Brian Sleet, hate Nicky Polanco. These guys are jerks. I got there. First, second, I'm there. Oh, man, Greg, you know, we're so glad to have you on our team. But I'm like, no, these guys are great guys. You know, and, you know, as you stay in this league, you realize people really are like that. You know, you can talk smack to each other and be a monster on the field because you get a little bit of a release. You know, all week you got to be civil. All week you got to be professional at your job. And for a couple hours, you get to just be an animal. And that's what I love about it. And, you know, at this age, I don't take things too serious on the field. I want to win just as bad as anyone, and I'll kill myself to do it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I love seeing Nicky and Brian, and I've texted them before every championship game they go to and all that stuff. Like, you know what, if I don't win it, I want to see you guys win it because I still remember, you know, really good times playing with them. So, you know, I love going against them. It's always a good test. They're two Hall of Famers, so it's always great to see them.
Well, Greg, we really appreciate you taking some time out of your evening to chat some lacrosse with us. Brian and Bill will be down there for the game on Saturday, so I'm sure they'll enjoy having a chance to catch up with you in person. So thanks for chatting, and we'll see you this weekend.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Have a great night.
Thanks, Greg.
And again, that was Greg the Beast Gremlian from the New York Lizards joining us here on Inside the Crease. Just a few moments left here in the show. And guys, this is the second time we had an opportunity to talk to him this year. He's kind of a hard guy to track down after games because he's so good about signing autographs. That we usually have a hard time, you know, catching up with him. But what a great, great guy, great interview he is. So a really big thanks for him for calling in.
You know, he loves the game. He's a student of the game and a teacher of the game. He loves the game of lacrosse. And, you know, it shows in his reactions to the Lizards and to being as part of it. And it's great to have guys like that being able to teach the young guys and being able to bring them up, and we'll see future generations of Greg's to come because of it.
Exactly. You know, we want to, as we're running out of time, running low on time here, real quick, the schedule for this week, schedule gets kicked off on Friday, May the 2nd. A 7:30 start as the Cannons go to the Rochester Rattlers. On Saturday, May the 3rd, a 7 o'clock game, the Lizards at the Bayhawks. You can catch that game right here on MSI Sports Network on our Spreaker page. We'll have the link put up on the page. Also, you can catch our games on sfmsports.net. Click on the Bayhawks link. You can listen on your desktop. Scan the QR code to get Bayhawks Lacrosse on your phone with the TuneIn app. So make sure you check that out as well. Also, guys, and what I'm really excited about is that game is also going to be on ESPN3, so I'll actually be able to have to stay up late. I won't stay up too late because I have to play Sunday, but maybe I'll try to find a way to watch a little bit of it. Also on Saturday, a 7 o'clock start, the Hounds at the Launch, and then Sunday, a 5 o'clock start, Machine at the Outlaws, which... After last week, that Machine Outlaws game, I think, is going to be a really fun one to try to watch. That game also on ESPN3. So that will start at 11 o'clock p.m. for me. Hopefully, I'm not too worn out from the four games I'm going to be playing on Sunday, and I can stay up and watch those.
I think you'll be fine.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, I'll stay up for that as well.
Rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, pretty much. real quick, we're gonna run out of time. We're not going to get to Brian's coveted power rankings this week, but we'll put him on the spot first thing next week, right off the bat, and we'll see how he does with that. Plus, I think with one game under your belt, maybe it's a little bit easier to make it. We'll see what happens with two games. But again, tune in this weekend to MSI Sports Network for our game coverage. Then check out our YouTube page, post-game interviews, plus we'll have pictures up on our Facebook page from the game as well. So make sure you check out everything at MarylandSportsInsider.com. You can get links to all of our different social media platforms where you can find everything that we're doing there. So, again, thanks to Mike Evans and Greg Grenlian for calling in. For my co-hosts, Brian Bartsch and Bill Chris, I'm Jared Welsh. Thanks for tuning in to Inside the Crease. We'll be back same time next week for another great show. We'll end this show, as we do all of our Inside the Crease shows, with a 1-2-3 Go Bayhawks. So here we go. 1-2-3 Go,
Bayhawks.